Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Joel has taken an organization that was a case study in dysfunction and turned it into one that the Obama administration has hailed as a national model. He has been a tireless champion for children and a fearless proponent for reform.
Thank you for giving me the best job I've ever had, and I've had a lot of great ones. But being a chancellor of the school system that changed my own life and working with you and Dennis Walcott for over 8 years now to change the lives of others truly has been an extraordinary experience.
You know, we had a great pitcher for the first seven innings. We bring in the closer, and for the last couple of innings, and this was the right closer to bring in.
What I ask for is your patience as I get up to speed on all of the issues facing K through 12 education today.
Well, you know all those voices by now, and the transition from the Joel Klein era is underway, although not necessarily to Hearst Magazine's chair, Kathy Black. As you've been hearing on the news, the advisory panel appointed by the State Education Commissioner voted 4-2-2 against the experience waiver for Black. That's 4 against, 2 in favor, and the last 2 were for a delay to see if Mayor Bloomberg appoints a chief education officer to help Black with policy. That's apparently the compromise that State Education Commissioner David Steiner is looking for. Will the mayor go along? Maybe we got an indication that he will on this program yesterday from Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith.
If you have a large, complicated enterprise, particularly one that's in a lot of financial stress, you want to make sure the folks at the top have the right set of skills. So skill one would be business management, right-sizing the budget, helping produce the resources at the school level that are necessary. Job two is pedagogy. So you want to make sure you have a terrific chief pedagogy officer, whatever it might be called, and a chief and a terrific person at the top.
Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith from yesterday's show. Sounds a lot like the Steiner deal to me. Right now, we are very pleased that the outgoing chancellor, Joel Klein, is joining us one last time in this position to look back and to look forward. And Chancellor Klein, welcome back to WNYC. And first of all, thank you so much for being accessible to our listeners on this program over the years.
Well, thank you. It's been a privilege. And as I've said to you in the past, I've enjoyed it. And let me wish you and your listeners a happy Thanksgiving.
And same to you. And we'll talk about Kathy Black because that's in the news. But let's talk about you. It's time to reminisce. And you also came in for your skills as a change agent with no education experience. Your last job had been as a Justice Department official, busting up the Microsoft monopoly in the Clinton administration. And you also needed a waiver of the usual credentials. So looking back, what did you think at the time were your chief qualifications for becoming the school's chancellor?
I think just what you said in at the heart of it. I was a change agent. I had experience in multiple dimensions. I had not only been in running this big division at the Justice Department, I actually had been running a large portion of the Bertelsmann media company. I understood management. I understood the leadership qualities that I thought were necessary. And obviously, I had a deep commitment to K-12 education, and I think the kind of relationship with the mayor that would enable me to do the work that needed to be done.
And how did you get up to speed on academic policy? Did you have, in effect, a chief education officer advising you?
I did, actually. You know, it was right from the beginning I had appointed a deputy for teaching and learning. I also brought in a chief policy person, Michelle Cahill, who I had come to know right before I got appointed. And so I had the kind of support, and I think that is important. I think having the people around you that can provide the knowledge and expertise. And I'll give you one obvious example. I for example, right from the beginning, wanted to make sure I had really strong people in technology because so much needs to be done in that area in the mm-hmm. department. Strong people in finance, strong people in pedagogy. So, you know, people build a team. The good news, I think, right now is the team we have here at the department is extraordinary, and I think will provide the kind of support that Kathy needs.
Was it hard to get up to speed on academic policy? You weren't steeped in teacher training effectiveness or standardized test evaluation or all these things. You tried one citywide reading curriculum that you then abandoned at one point. What was the process, and how hard was it to become expert enough?
I think think, you know, it's a process in which you're growing more expert every day. I've been doing 8.5 years, and I still have things that I want to learn. But I think it's interesting what you just said, because it made me smile. I did. The first reading program I brought in, adopted, didn't work. Paradoxically, that was precisely the reading program that was recommended by the so-called educational expert. So in one sense, you know, people have, when they're steeped in an organization, sometimes they really get internally focused. A lot of people who grew up in an educational world, I think, had a very different culture from mine. You know, I was an outcome, results-driven guy from day one, Brian. And, you know, we've had some disputes about exactly how you measure that. But if you ask me, I think the most important thing over the last 8 years is we've moved this organization to a results-driven organization. There was a retrospective last week, a bunch of papers by academics throughout the world, and one of the people from Harvard really focused on that. And that's a big cultural change. And I don't think people who grow up in an organization are likely to be able to affect that kind of cultural change. So, you know, you learn in all areas, but it's so complex. So people right now, if I were looking at the school system, one of the big issues Kathy Black is going to have to tackle is the issue of budget. And it's a big, big issue. I mean, and how you do that and how you deal with the cuts that unfortunately the school system is facing. So no human being has all of the skills. But if you don't understand the comprehensive challenges and you focus only on the pedagogical issues, then I think you're really going to miss the forest from the trees.
What do you consider your biggest results-oriented accomplishment? Is it graduation rates?
Yeah, no question about that. Graduation rates, you know, when you're talking about 20 points more, you're talking about 15,000 children now graduating and 10,000 more going to the city university. I'm happy with the results on the state and the federal tests. Both of them, again, it was a paper by Jim Kempel, who's a very distinguished researcher. And I think they show that in both state and federal tests, we were getting real results. No question that our new small high schools, an independent study showed that they were outperforming similar schools, our charter schools. So it's a long set, but I'd be the first to admit that there's a lot more we need to do and the school system needs to do. 20-point increase in graduation rates is a big thing. However, I don't think our graduation level now is remotely where it needs to be. So I think there's a lot of work that's ahead of us. But I think over the last 8 years, the transformation of the culture and significant number of students who are now going to college that didn't in the past, I think are probably the highest achievements.
Any biggest frustrations or things you wish you could do over?
Sure. You know, I always think about the comment that Tony Blair made to a friend of mine who was his educational advisor, Michael Barber, when they were all finished. And Barber said, is there anything you should have done differently? And Blair said, we should have been bolder. And I think that's probably right. You know, I thought today, Tom Friedman, you probably saw it, had a column in the New York Times. And I thought it was really spot on. I don't think people understand the challenges that our children will face in the 21st century, the skills that will be demanded of them. The fact that if you don't make it through higher education these days, or at least definitely have the job skills that the market's demanding, you're not going to be able to succeed. I mean, we used to have, when I grew up, 60% of our workforce were high school dropouts. Today, that's not a formula for success. And what Tom points out is we've got to get prepared for that. And I think too often the disruptive noise of changing status quos gets in the way. So in terms of things I would have done differently, I certainly wish we had pushed it harder, pushed it more aggressively, and that I had spent time really developing some of the political support. You know, politics is a funny game. I think we had a lot of political support, but I certainly wish that we had even more support so that you can continue to push things harder and faster. I worry enormously about the state of K-12 education throughout this country, and one of the things that I plan to do is continue to stay active in the field and speak out on the issues.
Outgoing New York Schools Chancellor Joel Klein, my guest on WNYC. How would you like history to record the role of UFT President Randy Weingarten in negotiations with you? You won some historic concessions, like teachers not being able to simply choose their own schools through seniority. Did Randy try to block change at every turn, or was she a partner in historic change?
No, I think she was a partner. And, you know, again, we had some very strong disagreements, and, of course, the media likes to play those up. But I think Randy was a partner, and it's funny, as I leave, she and I had the chance to talk about some things, and there was a real, I think, sense on both our parts that we worked together to do things that made the system better. There were things we honestly disagreed about, and sometimes probably we got caught up in too much of the noise. But that overall, I look back at that as an effective partnership. And even on the national stage, you know, Randy's out there now, was instrumental in a reform in Colorado, negotiated a deal with a colleague of mine who's now up in New Haven, Garth Harries, negotiated a deal with Michelle Rhee. So obviously there are things we disagreed on. She has a different role from mine. She's got to represent the employees. That's not my principal assignment. But I have a lot of respect for the fact that Randy, I think over the past 8 years, that we worked together. We worked successfully on many things. I wish there were more.
What would be one big one that you wish you could have gotten over with her but was a stumbling block to this day?
I think there are two interrelated things. One is this whole thing that if you don't get hired by any of our 1,600 schools, we still keep you on the payroll interminably. And I don't think we can afford that. Right now, it's well over $100 million. And that's preventing us from hiring teachers that our schools want. So, and I think that was a bad thing. I had proposed...
That's the rubber room, right?
Well, it's really what they call ATRs, which is absentee teacher reserves. These are people who get dismissed at one school because the budget's downsized or the school is downsized, and they can't find a job, even though there are thousands of jobs. Some of them don't look for a job. Some of them nobody appears willing to hire. And I think if you give people 6 months or even a year and they don't get a job, they should leave. The other one, which is going to become a big issue, and I'd be happy to come back on and talk anytime you want to talk about it, is if we have layoffs and we have to do them under the current state law, last in, first out, that is catastrophic. We should do layoffs not based on seniority, but really based on contribution to the school system. And if you do it on seniority, there's no question we're going to lose a lot of good teachers. And so I think we need a new, fair system, but not one that's simply based on who is the most recently hired. That person goes first.
How would you do it? Just based on principal preference?
No, I think you could do it on several factors. One, we have annual current ratings of teachers, and about 1,500 or so are rated unsatisfactory, and it's pretty hard to get rated unsatisfactory. Second thing is, I told you about that $120 million of people who are now no longer rated, no longer teaching and yet being paid. We need to have them eliminated. I would look at teacher value add and those subjects where we had it. That would be a factor. I would look at absenteeism and other factors that are sort of indicative, I think, of the criteria that would be important. But I think you could devise a fair system, and we're in the process, obviously, of doing that under Race to the Top. But to simply say the last person we hired is the first to go makes no sense. In no other industry, I think, would you do that. And I think it's not appropriate for public school teachers. It seems to me we really ought to think about how we professionalize teaching and focus on excellence. And that's something that I think often gets missed in the discussion. I think teaching, if you focus on excellence, will increasingly become seen as a profession, seen as a highly desired profession. In my view, teachers are America's heroes, and yet some reason, because we've created an assembly line process, they're viewed much more as kind of based on seniority, based on job protection, based on lifetime pension. And I think that really undermines a culture of excellence, and no place is that more obvious than in Last In, First Out.
New York City Schools Chancellor on his way out, Joel Klein, my guest on WNYC. You mentioned your frustration with politics before. The Daily News quoted City Hall sources over the weekend who said, you really left because you were losing the confidence of the mayor, especially for not being a good communicator, for leaving so many parents and teachers disaffected, even while policy experts were praising you and the numbers showed meaningful improvement. Will you acknowledge that the mayor was unhappy with your role as a polarizing figure?
certainly not in any discussion I had with him. The mayor couldn't have been clearer to me. When I went to the mayor and told him, and I had discussed it with him before his reelection, but then we sat down about 3-4 months ago, and I told him I thought this was my time. I explained why to him. He said he wants me to stay. He was clear about that. I said I appreciated that, but you know, I was 64. If I stayed, it would be 67. I really wanted to take on some new challenges and careers. I thought it important to get somebody who could serve for 3 years. So in all those discussions, there's no question what the mayor's preference was. Now, were there people at City Hall who grouse, you know, the nameless, gutless, faceless people who do this kind of thing in the newspaper and don't have the courage to stand up? I'm sure there are. I worked in a White House for President Clinton, and I used to see this happen all the time. But in terms of the mayor and myself, our relationship was solid. It remains solid, and I meant it sincerely when I said it's the best job anyone's ever given me, and for that, I am deep in his debt.
The news article also said the choice of Kathy Black may have been specifically to have someone who is strong where you were weak. That is, that she'll basically continue your policies, but she's known for her salesmanship. Does that sound right to you?
Again, I think the mayor is focused on management. I would hope that she's a good salesman to sell the policies, and but I think the things that I think the mayor has been focused on, and rightly focused on, are the huge management challenges. You just asked me a question about what's an alternative to last in, first out. That's a management challenge. That's not about curriculum. Question of how you manage a budget in very challenging times. Those are key management questions. I think being good at sales helps, and to the extent that she brings that talent as well. But I don't think it's a substitute for core management skills.
So do you have reason to believe that the mayor will accept this David Steiner idea of a chief academic officer in addition to Kathy Black?
I'll let the mayor decide that, but it strikes me, one of the things I've been thinking about, and if you allow me a little sort of reflection from a historical perspective. You know, I've worked in this field for 8.5 years. I've come to know virtually every superintendent throughout the country. And I will tell you, right at the top of the list are people like Arne Duncan from Chicago, people like Michael Bennett, who's now a senator who ran Denver, my friend Roy Romer, who ran Los Angeles. These people, every single one of them, would not have been qualified for the credential that's required. I think people are looking at the wrong issue in this. I think your question before, do you get good guidance? Right now in this department, I've got 6 deputy chancellors who, among the 6 of them, probably have close to 200 years of experience. And it seems to me she will have all the support that she needs at every level, indeed deeper levels of expertise because of the way we have structured it. So I find this discussion, quite frankly, somewhat misguided. And to think, again, what you said before, I mean, I had a chief number 2 person when I started, and that was a big part of what the commissioner, when he wrote in his opinion. But let me tell you, I moved to a very different system, and one in which I think we're getting a much better, more robust organization, more robust discussion and policy. So I'm not a believer in trying to figure out how to micromanage organizations from a distance, nor to think about what other people will need. If Kathy Black wants my best advice, she should structure it in a way that enables her to be most effective, because she will be accountable for the outcomes and for the performance of the system.
I understand your position, but it looks like the politics of the moment are that David Steiner, the state education commissioner, who does have the power to deny the waiver, has kind of put this deal or ultimatum, or I don't know how strongly he's put it to the mayor, on the table, which is this idea of a chief academic officer in addition to Kathy Black, or she's going to get rejected. Do you think that the mayor will accept this idea in a way that's acceptable to him?
Right, I'll leave that up to the mayor to decide.
But you're saying the structure is really already in place in which that exists, and it would just be relabeled and renamed?
Well, again, I don't know what it exactly is. I mean, there are people anonymously saying that this one said this to this. What I do know is I have got 6 deputy chancellors with a multitude of experience focused, for example, right directly on the schools, on accountability, on the whole set of issues involving new schools and closures, on the human resource issues, on community issues. And it seems to me that that's so much of the expertise you want from people who have the appropriate credentials, but more importantly, the experience and the expertise. And I would, if I were doing this, let her build her team around that. There's no question she will need supports, just like I needed supports. There are people around here who every day help me think better, understand more deeply the issues that we face in a complex school system. And it just seems to me, again, you know, this will be worked out by others, but it seems to me not to be a very thoughtful approach on the way to handle the issues that the head of a school system would handle. Under the current theory, Arnie Duncan would not have been appointed because he doesn't have the credentials, or Michael Bennett, who did such a bang-up job in Denver. So I don't know. I'll let others sort through all the moves here.
Joel Klein, the outgoing New York City Schools Chancellor, my guest for just another few minutes. And before you go, you're taking a job now as Executive Vice President, do I have the title right, with Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, to work on what you called innovation for the burgeoning education marketplace. Does that mean you're going to help Rupert Murdoch make money off the public schools?
No, I'm going to put it like that. I'm going to help the school systems by developing products that I hope they want. And in that respect, I think that there's a huge opportunity here. I've believed for a long time that it's going to take the private marketplace to develop the kinds of programs and platforms that will enable our students to learn better. And I don't see why, for example, in the 21st century, we think textbooks are a meaningful way to be educating our students. There are so many better programs that are out there and platforms that are out there. And I hope to be able to do that for News Corp. And I hope if what we do is good, that the school systems will want to buy it, just like today they buy textbooks.
You were known as a Democrat, worked for President Clinton and all that. Michael Daley, in his Daily News column, wrote, "Say it ain't so, Joel. Tell me you're not really stepping down to become a token Democrat in what is really a vast right-wing conspiracy." What's your response to that?
I think it's silly. I am a Democrat. I did work for President Clinton. I've never been shy about support Democratic candidates. I mean, there are times when I may not support a specific one. And I'm given an opportunity by a company and its CEO to work in an area where I think I can make an enormous contribution in an area I care about. I think, you know, if you develop these opportunities, not just for the U.S., but throughout the world, to use new and different learning strategies in order to help students learn. I think that's very powerful, and I'm happy to be doing it. And, you know, if people want to judge the world only through sort of a narrow political prism on whether you're on one side of this debate or another, I think that's a big problem in the country today. The polarization and in my view, the totally reductionistic view of the world that too often has become characteristic of public commentary.
So, and Rupert Murdoch isn't a main purveyor of that?
Well, look, again, when you see Rupert Murdoch has news stations and other things, and they engage in public discussion, and they are different from, in some respects, from others, and others push back and all of that. That's the media we now have. But my job is to focus on these educational opportunities and to help children learn, and I'm proud of the fact that News Corp is willing to support me in that.
By the way, just yesterday we learned that News Corp bought Wireless Generation, the company that essentially built ARIS, the city's $80 million online computer network for tracking student achievement that you've used. Is that a coincidence?
Is it a coincidence? I mean, I assume News Corp has been looking at opportunities. I mean, they want to be in this area, and so they decided that wireless made sense for them. So, and you know, I've said publicly I think wireless is a very talented organization, so I'm happy that they bought them.
Would there be a conflict of interest when dealing with New York City? If you're in charge of the unit trying to do more ed tech business, would you recuse yourself or something because of the influence you have here to direct taxpayer dollars?
Oh, I certainly am. I would recuse myself while I'm here, and then there are post-employment rules that I surely will observe. I mean, the Conflict of Interest Board, the lawyers will outline exactly what the appropriate rules are, and you can be assured that I will fully observe them.
Last thing on this. Will you try to convince Mr. Murdoch to support adequate funding for public education on his editorial pages? He's probably been more historically for privatization.
As I always say with my discussions with the mayor, Brian, those discussions will be between Mr. Murdoch and myself. I think people are entitled to your candid advice, and if he asks me about it, I'll give it to him.
Well, anything else you want to say to New Yorkers before you head off into the sunset?
I just want to thank them. This has been almost 8.5 years of my life. I grew up in the public schools in New York. They changed my life. I believe that education can change people's lives dramatically, and I'm enormously grateful to the city for having given me the opportunity to be at the helm of a school system that really changed my own life. And I want to say to you, even in this interview, you know, you're tough and you're fair, and I admire enormously the work that you do in the city of New York.
Well, that is very, very kind. And best of luck to you again in your new endeavor. Maybe we'll talk to you in that role. And I appreciate, again, you coming on and talking to our listeners over the years.
Thanks, Brian.
New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein. Brian Lehrer and WNYC will turn to those pat-downs and body scan protests coming up next.